Welcome back to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and during this segment, we're going to get a Jihad Watch update. Our guest is Robert Spencer, and he is the director of jihadwatch.org, as well as a best-selling author on the subject of all things Islam. Robert, thanks so much for joining us again.
Always good to be here, Jerry. Thank you.
You know, it seems like Islam is always in the news. Always.
Well, you know, the jihad imperative is a constant in Islamic theology and history, and certainly the jihadis are on the march everywhere. So I think that that's something that you can count on continuing for the foreseeable future.
Now, I want to go ahead and just deal with a whole potpourri of different issues, and let's begin with the European crisis when it comes to all these asylum seekers.
Well, you know, the Islamic State last February said that it was soon going to flood Europe with 500,000 refugees. Shortly after that, the refugees started flooding into Europe, and yet nobody seems to make the equation. I'm not saying that every one of those 500,000 is Islamic State, but the Islamic State was saying that they were going to create a refugee crisis in Europe, and they said that they were going to have their jihadis among the refugees. The Islamic State has already boasted that they've had gotten 4,000 of their men into Europe by means of the refugee crisis already, and that more are coming all the time. The Lebanese education minister recently said that among the refugees in his country, there are 20,000 active jihadis, and they're on their way to Europe. So it's of serious concern that this refugee crisis is being exploited by the jihad group, specifically the Islamic State, and that concern about national security in regard to it is not racism or hatred or bigotry, but it's simply a realistic appraisal of where we are now and what the Islamic State is doing.
This could change Europe forever.
Yes. There's no going back. I mean, you know, you bring in, there's talk about having as many as 20 million Muslims in Germany alone by 2020, 5 years from now. That's going to fundamentally transform German society and that of Europe as a whole.
Wow. What about America?
Well, you know, Barack Obama has already said that we're going to take large numbers of these refugees, and he dismisses concerns about any security problems that they might present, and suggests that it's simply a matter of religious prejudice or bigotry that the that some people, he says, have wanted to only bring in the Christians and not the Muslims. And he says that that's a terrible thing. That's not who we are, and why to have a religious test of that kind. But he doesn't address the real problem that leads people to make that distinguishing, that attempt to distinguish among the refugees to start with. And that is that among the jihadis, among the refugees who are jihadis, all of them are Muslims, and none of them are Christians. So if you only let in the Christians, you're not letting in any jihadis.
Hmm. And it's also a fact that he keeps referring to widows and orphans. That's basically how he's painting these would-be asylum seekers.
Yeah, when actually they're overwhelmingly male, overwhelmingly young and able-bodied, raising questions as to, you know, where are these people's families? If they're really fleeing a problem, a crisis, a humanitarian crisis, then where are their families? You know, would you, if you lived in a war zone, Jerry, and your family was in imminent danger, would you just up and leave and leave your wife and children there? Or would you take them wherever you were going? And this is the issue that Obama has not addressed. That these people are young, able-bodied men. They either don't have families, or they've left their families back where they are in this war zone. And that either way, it doesn't add up.
You know, it's interesting. The liberals would never admit it, but in a very real sense, this whole crisis points to the failure of Islam.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. Yeah, that certainly the societies of the Middle East have not been able to create conditions whereby their people were safe and care provided for, and so they're all streaming into the West. They're not going into Muslim countries. As a matter of fact, the Saudis have refused to take any of the refugees because of security concerns that we're not allowed to have in the U.S.
Hmm. You know, I don't see how this can end well. to be frank with you. I mean, I don't mean to be pessimistic, but I just, as the whole thing goes forward, how do we go back?
Yeah, well, that is the problem. I don't see how this could possibly end well, because if there are the jihadis among the refugees, then they're going to strike at a certain point. We'll be looking at Paris attacks and that kind of thing in the United States, and courtesy the refugees. We have to remember also that it was there were two refugees, they had just come into Europe via Greece in October, who were among the Paris attackers. And so does he think the United States will be exempt, or does he just not care?
Hmm. Well, the thing that people don't understand is that you know, a lot of people just think, well, Islam is a religion of peace, but you've got a few bad apples out there, and that's just like the Crusades. They were a bunch of bad apples among the so-called Christians. And so there's this sort of moral equivalence. And what they don't realize is the strong religious motivation that exists among the jihadists to get back to the teachings of Muhammad as they find them in the Quran and the Hadith and as they interpreted them.
Yeah, the thing is that people who make these facile comparisons and say that every religion has its extremists, well, they betray the fact that they don't really know anything about any religion. Christianity has never had armed groups of people committing terrorist acts and justifying them by quoting scripture. It's never happened in history. There are Christians who've done terrible things, and there are Christians who've done terrible things in the name of Christ and the Church. But they were never able to justify or to claim properly that they were inspired by the teachings of Jesus or the teachings of any sect of Christianity. Whereas Islam has developed doctrine, theology, and legal system mandating warfare against unbelievers. And throughout Islamic history, there have been Muslims who have committed acts of violence and explicitly explained that they were doing so in accord with the teachings of Muhammad and the teachings of the Quran. So to equate these things as if all religions were equally capable of inspiring their adherence to violence, it's a comforting politically correct fiction these days in the anti-Christian and post-Christian West, but it doesn't have any connection to reality.
It's scary, though, as we go forward. I'm surprised, or I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like you or even somebody like me might be accused of a hate crime for speaking the truth on a subject like this, even when we speak it in love.
Yeah, well, you know, this is just this is the story of my life, Jerry. All these years I've been warning about this threat and trying to explain the jihad threat in its full nature and magnitude to English-speaking people, and it's routine. You know, I'm classified as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center and routinely accused of this. And, you know, you wonder, did people who opposed the Nazis get accused of hate? Did people who opposed communism get accused of hate? Well, I think actually in that case they did, but that it is a tactic that has evolved more recently among the aiders and abettors of the violent or totalitarian system in question, and that it's, well, there's no truth to it, but it's a very effective tactic to intimidate people into thinking there's something wrong with opposing jihad terror.
And meanwhile, it seems like the Muslim perspective is getting taught well in schools, treated well, and then if somebody brings up something Christian, oh, you can't do that, that's a violation of the separation of church and state. And I'm talking about American schools.
That for decades, the ACLU and the public school establishment worked hard to efface any sign of Christianity in the public schools, in the expression of how the public schools were organized and so on. There was no way you could have any Christian prayer or reference to Christianity or anything of the kind. And yet now we have public schools setting aside rooms for Muslim prayer and so on, and allowing Muslim students to be excused from class when it's time for prayer. And people don't seem to see any inconsistency in this, that for 30 years we were anxiously getting rid of all traces of Christianity from the schools, but Islam seems to be just fine. And I think that it's because in the multiculturalist ethos that is dominant in the world today, it's more of a hatred of the West and hatred of Christianity than it is a genuine impulse to say that all cultures are equal. In multiculturalism, all cultures are equal except our own, which is to be criticized and discarded in any possible manner.
Now, I think along those lines that history is being rewritten in our time, and what children learn, they don't learn, for example, that Islam was spread for the most part by the sword. And I don't even know why I say for the most part. It was spread by the sword, period.
Yes, and you're right, they don't. I mean, I was amazed, you know. I had seen these stories, Jerry, and I thought that there might be some bias in the textbooks. But when I actually got hold of some high school textbooks a few years ago, and this was completely at random, these were actually textbooks of a high school student with whom I was acquainted. And I just randomly was able to look through what was in these textbooks, public school textbooks, and they were very harshly critical of Christianity. Of course, long sections about the Crusades, long sections about Christianity's role supposedly in Western imperialism and the conquest of North America and the death of the Indians in large numbers and so on, and all this was a negative, all these blots against Christianity. But when it came to Islam, there was not a hint of jihad warfare, not a hint that it had ever existed, not a hint that anybody had ever converted to Islam except because they thought it was wonderful, and a warmly positive view of Muhammad and of Islamic civilization. And the bias was open. But the thing is, this has come about because Western textbook publishing houses, without realizing, they wanted to be fair and multicultural and so on. And so they opened up their publications to groups like the Council on Islamic Education, which is a Muslim Brotherhood-linked group, and others like it, that they would supposedly be keeping their materials free from bias, but actually they were adding in a pro-Muslim bias and making the textbooks into essentially vehicles for Islamic proselytizing. And that's the situation that prevails to an alarming degree all over the country these days.
You know, I think people need to grasp what the Muslim Brotherhood is and just how nefarious it is and what came out at that Texas trial a few years ago in America. I mean, it's a really important subject about the Muslim Brotherhood. So please,
sure,
Enlighten us.
Well, the thing about it is, Jerry, in the first place, we have to remember that every, not just most, but every last Muslim group of any consequence in the United States, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, the Muslim American Society, the Islamic Society of North America, the Islamic Circle of North America, the North American Islamic Trust, on and on and on, they're all linked to the Muslim Brotherhood in various ways. And the Muslim Brotherhood, the document to which you're referring about out of Texas, is a document that was uncovered during a raid of the offices of the Holy Land Foundation. The Holy Land Foundation used to be the largest Islamic charity in the United States until it was shut down for aiding Hamas, the jihad terror group. And when the investigation was going on, investigators from the FBI, they raided the offices of the Holy Land Foundation and carted off all these boxes full of documents. So among the documents that were captured in these raids was one that was detailing the Muslim Brotherhood's plan for the United States. And it said, and I quote, "The brothers must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers, that is, by the hands of the Western non-Muslims and the hands of Muslims, so that it falls and Allah's religion is victorious over other religions." This same document listed the Muslim Brotherhood's subsidiary and allied organizations in the United States. And as I say, among them were all the major Muslim groups in the country or their parent organizations.
And the Muslim Brotherhood is affiliated with Hamas, or I guess Hamas is the Muslim Brotherhood. It's just the Palestinian version of it. And the Muslim Brotherhood is in all kinds of different nations.
The Muslim Brotherhood's an international organization, and it was founded in Egypt in 1928. and it was founded expressly to restore the caliphate, the universal government of Muslims worldwide, that had just been abolished by the secular Turks in 1924. And it is the father, the direct antecedent of Al-Qaeda, as well as Hamas. That is, Al-Qaeda was formed by people who were coming out of the Brotherhood, and Hamas, as you say, styles itself as the Muslim Brotherhood branch in Palestine. And so the Muslim Brotherhood is really the forefather of the major jihad terror groups in the world today.
We're talking right now with Robert Spencer. His website is a must-read, jihadwatch.org, and very, very important stuff. Robert Spencer has written some best-selling books. What's your name a book or two that you want to publicize, and we'll get right back into this topic.
Well, Jerry, the big bestsellers have been The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, and The Truth About Muhammad, a biography of the founder of Islam. And my latest book is The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS.
Huh, wow. Okay, this is must-have. If you really want to be enlightened on this and cut through the politically correct garbage. All right, let's talk about the Crusades. And we hear about that, and I haven't heard anybody say anything positive about the Crusades, but there was almost maybe a hint of it in your title.
Oh, yeah. Well, that book does have a section on the Crusades, and it shows that the Crusaders certainly did some things that cannot be excused, and nobody's interested in excusing them. But at the same time, the Crusades were not the imperialist, racist, proto-colonialist exercise that they are usually portrayed to be. And you may recall that Bill Clinton, right after 9/11,
yeah,
blamed the Crusades for the tension between the West and the Islamic world. And I think many people in the West, especially in the Western intelligentsia, have this idea that everything was fine and the Muslims were minding their own business, and then these rapacious Crusaders descended from Europe and were still paying for it with suspicion and hostility from the Islamic world. When in reality, the Crusades only followed 450 years of attacks from jihadis that had conquered and Islamized over half of the Christian world, or what had been over half of the Christian world before then. 450 years of uninterrupted and unanswered jihad attacks. Finally, when the Byzantine Empire was smashed in a battle with Muslims, the Battle of Manzikert in Anatolia, what is now Turkey, in the year 1071, the Byzantine Emperor appealed to the Pope for help from the Western Christians. And that was what started the Crusades in motion. Also, there had been a wholesale destruction of churches in the Holy Land and the menacing of Christian pilgrims who had gone to Jerusalem to visit the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and other churches, the Mount of Olives and so on. And they were being kidnapped, killed, enslaved, and so on. And so for those reasons, the Crusades were called to defend the pilgrims and to ensure that there would be safe passage for them and that churches would be able to be continued and maintained in that part of the world, and also that the Christian Empire, the Byzantine Empire, would be defended. And these were the goals of the Crusaders. As I say, they exceeded that agenda and did some things that were definitely abuses. But in the main, the cause was noble and the cause was defensive. And for those 200 years that the Crusaders held territory in the Holy Land, that is between 1099 and 1291, when the last Crusader kingdom was destroyed, there were no Muslim incursions into Europe. And the Muslims were pressing into Europe from the 7th century all the way through to the 17th, and would almost certainly have conquered Europe entirely had it not been for that 200 years when the battle was taken to them.
Isn't that interesting? And now, of course, they're winning the battle without firing a shot, or so it would appear. But God is sovereign. God is sovereign. Jesus Christ is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. Jesus Christ is the one before whom we'll all appear, and he will judge all of us, the living and the dead. That includes Muhammad. That includes all the Muslims. And that's why we do what we do for missionary purposes, so people will know and they'll be prepared. But help us when it comes to bringing us up to modern times. Help us to understand ISIS and just deal with the name itself. How come some people say ISIS, but the president says ISIL? And I don't trust this president, so I don't know the difference. I have a feeling there's almost an anti-Israeli or anti-Israel remark in calling him ISIL as opposed to ISIS, but I'm not sure, and I want you to enlighten us.
Well, actually, and when it comes to that, Jerry, I'm not sure either, but that is the best guess that people have, that the Islamic State, in the first place, and ISIL and ISIS, it's all the same entity. They're not three different groups or two different groups. It's all one group, the Islamic State, ISIS, and ISIL. The name of the group up until June 29th, 2014, was the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Now, the Levant in Arabic is Sham, and that's the Islamic State, ISIS, the of Iraq and Sham. The Levant being, of course, the Mediterranean area of Lebanon, Israel, and Jordan, and Syria. And
well, so, okay, wait, spell this out. Does this mean, then, that in a sense what the Islamic State was claiming is that Israel is Islamic? The territory belongs to Islam and not to the Jews.
Yeah, and that's why some people think that there is an anti-Israel edge to Obama insisting on calling it ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, instead of ISIS, as everybody else does, the Islamic State of Iraq and Shams. It means the same thing, but people don't know that. And just to have the Levant there emphasizes that they are claiming Israel as part of their territory. Now, the thing is that either way, the Islamic State changed its name on June 29th, 2014, and dropped the second half of the name altogether and calls itself simply the Islamic State. Now, nobody wants to call it that because, of course, Obama and his allies, they want to pretend that it doesn't have anything to do with Islam at all. And so they certainly can't call it the Islamic State. That would just be emphasizing how silly and out of touch with reality they are to deny its Islamic character.
Well, for example, when that Paris mastermind was executed or was killed, you know, just a couple weeks ago, what was that book he was holding in the pictures that they kept showing over and over and over?
The Paris mastermind holding a book, that was the Quran.
I know. I just wanted to hear you say it. None dare call it Islam, as my colleague
put it. Some other book that I didn't know about. But the only picture I saw, he was holding up a Quran.
Of course, of course. And there's a link there, isn't there?
Oh, of course, yeah. What he was saying, actually, quite explicitly, was that what he did in Paris was inspired by Islam. And whatever he did before that, if the picture was taken from before that, then the message is still the same, that his jihad violence was inspired by and in service of Islam.
Yeah, but President Obama says this has nothing to do with Islam.
Yeah, this is one of the strangest, most ludicrous Orwellian fantasies that prevail in the world today, and that is that the Islamic State, which makes recruits among Muslims worldwide by appealing to Islamic texts and teachings and by showing itself to be an authentic exponent of those texts and teachings, they are dismissed as having nothing to do with the primary thing that they do have to do with. And that is just it's a function of the fact that the president threw out his career has not said the slightest negative word about Islam, and it seems as if it's very important for him. He even said that he considered it one of his primary duties as president to dispel people's misconceptions, so-called, about Islam. And I thought, where was that in the Constitution? He doesn't want people to think ill of Islam. He obviously thinks it's great, whether he's a Muslim or not. And so he has entangled himself in this total ludicrous denial, pretending that the quintessentially Islamic thing, the Islamic State, has nothing to do with the only thing it really does have to do with.
Okay, Robert Spencer of JihadWatch.org is our guest right now. We have just a few minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about ISIS or IS in reference to the caliphate.
The caliphate is the only legitimate government for Muslims worldwide, the only government to which any of them owe allegiance, according to Islamic theology. Sunni Islamic theology, and Sunnis are 85 to 90% of Muslims worldwide. So the caliphate was abolished by the secular Turkish government in 1924, and since then the the jihad groups that have sprung up in the wake of it, in the wake of the abolition of the caliphate, particularly the Muslim Brotherhood in 1928, they all explicitly wanted to restore the caliphate, and that was one of their primary goals. But no group was able to do it until finally the Islamic State did in 2014. And this is one of the reasons why they have such an appeal for Muslims worldwide, with 30,000 young Muslims now having traveled from all over the world to join the Islamic State, because they accept that it is the legitimate caliphate and believe that they owe an allegiance to it that transcends all other earthly allegiances.
Now, at one point, it seemed like the big enemy here was Al-Qaeda. Everybody else was fine. They were cool. Then we heard about ISIS. Then we heard about Boko Haram. And, you know, it just seems like there's one group after another. How many groups are there like this?
Oh, hundreds. There are so many jihad groups all over the world. We could just spend the rest of the time listing them. But actually, the Islamic State is a an offshoot of Al-Qaeda. It was Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and then broke with the Al-Qaeda leadership over the question of whether it was an opportune time to establish a caliphate. The Al-Qaeda leadership thought that if they tried to establish a caliphate in Iraq, that they would be stopped by the Americans, that the Americans would come in and demolish and destroy the caliphate. And the Islamic State people thought, no, they won't do it. We'll be able to succeed in establishing a caliphate. And so far, they have proven correct.
Wow. All right, we only have just a couple minutes remaining. What about the possibility of a reformation in Islam?
Very, very, very unlikely. I will never say never, but it would be very, very difficult. The Quran says, has Allah saying to Muhammad, "Today I have perfected your religion for you." Now, if your religion says that it's perfect in the Holy Book, then what's to reform? And the problem is that with the death penalty being given to people who are considered heretics and apostates in Islam, reformers are under a threat constantly. And we see this constantly around the world, that, for example, in 1985, Mahmoud Muhammad Taha, an Islamic theologian, he recommended reform and said that instead of the violent passages of the Quran being considered to have transcended and superseded the peaceful ones, which is ordinary Islamic theology, the peaceful passages should be considered to have superseded the violent ones. And he was hanged by the Sudanese government as a heretic. This kind of thing inhibits reform efforts.
Hmm. In Mali recently, there was the attack by Al-Qaeda, and they basically said, if you can recite something from the Quran, we'll let you go. If not, they killed him. And so let me ask you a question. Would they have allowed English recitations?
The Quran has to be recited in Arabic or you're not reciting the Quran. So, for example, if I had been there and I know lots and lots of the Quran by heart, but in English, I would not have been able to get by, nor would I have wanted to.
Wow. Well, that's crazy. Let me ask you this. How many people understand the Arabic? It's my understanding there are lots of Muslims who actually know Quranic verses, but they don't know what they mean because they don't know Arabic.
Yes, that's quite so. Most Muslims today are not Arabic speakers, and so they're just mouthing syllables.
That's good. That's better for the world. That's why there's so. That's why there's so many peaceful Muslims.
They're told by the preachers the clerics what it says and what their duties are, and unfortunately, all too many are willing to heed.
Yeah.
I remember being told by a Muslim from Pakistan, and he was being completely serious. He wasn't making a joke. He said to me, "I have memorized almost all of the Quran, and I'm very proud of my religion. And one day I intend to get one of those translations and find out what it means."
Jihadwatch.org. Robert Spencer, always a pleasure. Go ahead and give us the title of that most recent book, the one that mentions ISIS.
The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS. Available now at any self-respecting bookstore and at Amazon.com.
All right. Robert Spencer, thanks so much. All the best to you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye-bye.